Welcome to Dominate for Two, a War Machine and Hordes podcast. I'm Alex.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Benjamin.
And today we have, I believe, our first repeat guest. I could be wrong on that. I'm not exactly a Dominate for Two historian. but Chris Dan Cox has joined us on the back of his total rout at GrotzCon. Congratulations, sir.
Thanks, guys. Glad to be here again. I wouldn't call it a total rout. There were three tournaments. I only won two of them. So I did lose over the weekend. But
what was the third tournament? It
was our local invitational type tournament. So,
but like an LCQ or something? Kind of?
Precisely.
Like a feeder event? So, yeah.
You won all the big tournaments, but none of the locals think you're hot.
Yeah, exactly. They knew that I had to come down to earth at some time.
So how was GrotzCon? Because I've basically only like heard about it through like your Facebook posts. Like, to I'm assuming a lot of like our American listeners, GrotzCon basically doesn't exist.
Yeah, I could see it. It's definitely one of the smaller cons, but it was super low key, super friendly, really well run event. The organizer is a super great guy. I'm gonna say that word 1,000 times, I swear. But it's a lot of fun, and we get a lot of local players, obviously, but then we have a lot of players from out east come. This year we had Bubba came across, but in previous years we've also had guys like David Beauchamp's come down for it. So having that kind of west and east, they often, at least a few of them, come out. And then we also had a couple guys from the west coast come out, so John Fairs made his way here, Corey Doyle, Jeff Everett. So it's a pretty good connection of people from across Canada that make it their way to it. And then it just ends up being a super blast of an event because it's, like I said, so well run. And really, it's been a little growing community for a while now that's just getting better and better every year.
Yeah, honestly, like, I'm just, like, super, like, blown away about how, like, stacked Canada is, like, in terms of War Machine players. Because you guys are, like, what, a third of our population, like, the U.S.'s population? But you probably have, like, as many, if not more, like, top-tier tournament War Machine players. You do better than us in ATC, or at least about as well. And I just think that's amazing. I really want to get around to going up to some of the Canadian events sometime.
Yeah, we have a lot of Canadian players who are fantastic. You know, going out east, I was at the Sioux, what is about a month ago now. So going out there and getting to play against a lot of those guys, which I don't necessarily always get the opportunity to, just being on the same team as them in WTC, was an awesome experience. And then, yeah, when the couple that have come out here and playing them here, you know, it's also a great experience. So to say that, you know, I consider myself a good player, I don't know if I'd consider myself the topest of tier players, especially when I judge myself against other WTC players on my own team. It's just like the level of skill is just unbelievable in this country. But that's not to put down any other country either, right? The Americans are great as well. Like I got my butt kicked by Brett Fogle, another WTC player on your American team, you know, a couple months back at LVO. So.
Yeah, so did I. We're yeah, basically the same level of skill, right, Chris? We both get our ass beat by Brett, so that means we're basically the same.
Yeah, yeah, one and the same.
I'm just waiting for my personal GrotzCon.
No,
Chris, it can happen. Anyone can get as lucky as me anytime. That's for sure.
Okay, well, to just make a quick pivot, the reason we brought you onto the show, there was this exceptionally good timing, but we've been kicking around talking about the concept of single list mastery. So to kind of break that down for our listeners, the idea is there's a lot of like high level tournament players out there who lean really hard on one list. And it kind of seems like they're so good at playing that one list because they've just played it so much. They're very comfortable with it that they can drop it into pretty much anything that isn't a hard counter and feel advantage just because of how much they've played it. And you, to spoil some of the rest of the episode, you played Borka, what, like 80%+ of the time there, from what I heard?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Three tournaments long, I played my off list twice of all of the games that I played. So yeah, I think it was something like 14 games, and 12 of them being Borka 2.
Yeah, and I've just found that super interesting. Like, you played against Jeff Everett. When I was chatting with him at KingdomCon, I played him twice over the course of the weekend, and he was basically mono-listing Osram the whole time. And he was, like, tying himself in knots trying to figure out what the other list should be, because he just kept on playing it so much that he had never considered what his off-list, like, needed to be. Or at LVO, when Keith Christensen won, he mono-listed Gatsby 3, and he basically brought a joke list of Scar 1 double Bane Riders that he literally never took out of his bag because he never planned to play it.
Yeah, it's crazy how sometimes these things just happen, and sometimes you're thinking of a list that's going to back up your primary list, and you know, you're trying to fix a lot of the problems with it or have a good support list to it, and then you just never run into the problems that you see, or you start to play your list with a level of experience that means even when you see those problems, you can just play around them with the list that you're more comfortable with. So like Jeff was, we were talking because we played three times last weekend at GrotzCon, and he was like, he had Ashlyn always in the bag, but he was like, I'm never going to bring her out. Like, we know what the matchup is going to be because you're going to play the list you're comfortable with, and I'm going to play the list I'm comfortable with, and we're just going to play it three times and see what happens. So, but it's funny because like when I look at my Borka 2 list, I pair it with Madrak 1, and when I went to, you know, LVO a ways back, we had talked about this before, I was leaning heavily on Madrak at the time, and it wasn't until I had a pretty decent champions run one listing Borka 2 that I really started to actually feel comfortable with him. And you know, it's not until you get kind of that experience at those high level tables where you can actually push the list to see exactly what it can do that you can kind of get more comfortable and lean on it heavier. So,
mm-hmm. Yeah, that's something I experienced a while ago back when I was still playing Kador. At one point, Ben mentioned to me that that in his estimation, I was playing Sorsha 1 too much. You know, because at the time I had been playing pretty similar Sorsha list archetypes for around a year. And I would do that thing where like, okay, I am so comfortable with this list, I can drop it into even like non-ideal situations and just by dint of practice and expertise play my way out of it. And in Ben's estimation, it was a trap for me. That said, like up until a certain point, I was winning really consistent with it. And I felt like having that level of practice, like dropping it into everything, did equip me very well, like going forward.
Yeah, I think to your point, though, about it being a trap, the one game I lost last weekend was because of the fact that I may have felt overconfident in my list. I played a Crix player, and my plan is almost entirely to lean on Madrak 1 for that list, but I had just felt maybe overconfident in my ability with Borka 2 at that point. And dropped him into Crix, and it was a great game, very back and forth. But I think I would have come away with it with Madrak where I didn't with Borka 2. So,
Yeah.
Sometimes no matter how comfortable you get, you got to stick with your plan, right?
yeah. You bring a list to deal with this. Like, don't question your judgment. If the off list isn't going to screw you, just play what you had planned for.
So an interesting addendum to that is basically how resilient to like misreading the meta do you think like one listing is once you've like gotten locked in with something that you're super comfortable with?
Sorry, what do you mean by like misreading?
So let's say the meta changes when you don't expect it to, like some new release, it ends up like making some second order or third order shifts, like factions that weren't changed start doing things that like you really aren't expecting. So like gun lines all of a sudden come out of the fucking woodwork and your list doesn't like gun lines. Like how much can the meta change without you like adapting your list or your play to where you can like still just like brute force things down? Like,
oh, certainly.
Like what amount of shelf life does like a particular list have once you've achieved this kind of mastery?
I think that a list when you're really good with it or when you're really experienced with it, has a pretty significant shelf life. I know it's probably a bad example, but you saw like the Tim Bankey's playing the Ghost Fleets of the World out there, that went on for months at a time. Mm-hmm. I imagine Gatsby 3 will be around for months. I played Borka 2 since the beginning of the year now, so he's been, it's had a pretty significant shelf life so far. Now that said, I did have an experience this weekend where, you know, I haven't seen a Legion player in a while, and now that their CID dropped, I ended up playing a Thags 1 into Borka 2 in the Champions bracket. First round of the day, hadn't seen Thags 1 in a while, forgot what Draconic Blessing did. And yeah, when I walked up the board and he cast Draconic Blessing, it was like, now this unit's immune to fire. I was like, about 75% of my army has fire damage, so that's probably not good for Borka.
Maybe.
It was not a great matchup, but you know, thankfully I was able to squeak through on that one. Played the same player the next day, and I was like, I am not dropping Borka 2 into you. So that was the exception for the going with the one list. So yeah, things do change, and you just have to adjust with it as it goes.
Yeah. Does anybody have anything else, or do we want to get into the nuts and bolts of the Borka list?
Yeah. oh boy, on metagame change, it can change pretty significantly. I know SR18 is changing less than 17 was, but like, I was in a place of being extremely practiced with both of the two lists I had, but one especially more than the other. And at the WTC, I really got blown up by an unexpected metagame change. Like, in the past, you know, I had just been used to riding it out, and then there was just a significant buck in the game that I just got caught out by it and, you know, blown up a lot. So, I mean, like, practice can insulate you from a ton of things, but not everything. And, like, in Mark II, when change was much more gradual, yeah, you could lean... Versus, I think what we've seen so far in Mark III, you could lean on, like, a set-piece list a lot longer back in those days than you can now.
Yeah, I mean, how long did that Veil 1 and that Lilith 2 list, like... I mean, they went in and out of the meta, but, like, the list never changed. It was just whether it was acceptable to play or not.
It was always acceptable to play.
there were a couple of Bizarro metas where I think it wasn't. I can't remember what exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I was playing basically the same Rasheth list continuously for, like, 3.5 years, so...
Yeah, that's something that I think Privateer Press has really succeeded with in the CID and the Mark III changes. Is they've made the game feel like it's more like video game updates, where like things do change like every couple of months. Maybe not for your faction, but you'll like feel the effects of other factions changing, which forces you to make some changes, and so it stays fresh more, at least in my personal experience.
Yeah, probably a good example in my experience would be like the shift in SR and kind of the recent shift we've seen from more infantry style lists as opposed to just Jack or Beast Bricks. So I know the exception to that is obviously like a Slayer spam, but you know, where I used to play Power of Dunia list, you know, Dumi 3 or Ragnar and have just a bunch of beasts walk up the board, I've kind of moved to a point now where in my mind that's just unplayable, where I used to think it was the best list or one of the best lists in Trolls. You know, you see the meta shift, you see the scenario game shift, and you can't play it anymore because you get left behind. But
yeah, I'm still holding on to Power of Dunia with Kolgrima just because that arc node is really busted with the spray. But oh god, I wish I could take Molg in literally any other theme. I would do it in a heartbeat.
Yeah, I mean, that's one thing I've noticed, that a lot of the, at least with the Signar builds that I was running, like a lot of the more Jack-orientated builds that I was dinking around with for a while fell out of being useful with a lot of the scenario pressure, especially with people bringing a lot more units.
Okay, well, let's move on to talking about the list in particular. So this was Borka 2 Storm of the North. Could you give us a quick rundown, Chris?
Yeah, certainly. So you're right. It's Borka 2, Storm of the North. in the battle group is a rune bearer, and then a mauler and an earthborn and a pyre troll. Units that I have a max unit of raiders, two units of fire eaters, two units of bears, a max stone, and the Northkin Elder on that stone. And I follow that up with the solos of the Fellcaller is free, Valka is free, and then I pay for Linissa Russell. So lots of, outside of the Raiders, lots of kind of small mobile units. The Raiders are kind of a big chunk that goes down the middle of the board. So
I guess my next question would be the Bears. Since you're playing with Borka 2 and you can give them concealment at all times, do you ambush one set? Do you ambush both sets or neither set? Or is it really super variable depending on the matchup?
I almost 100% of the time ambush both units of bears. I find that even if the opposing army, you know, is going to be affected by the fact that the bears would be stealth, or that I can maybe reach out and get them with bears early on, but it's much more useful to have the threat from both edges of the board and saying, you kind of have to go to that middle spot on the board to get the most impact I can out of the other things in my army, like the fire eaters and the raiders. If the opponent gives you something on the edge of the board, you have two options or two tools to go get it with the bears, or you just always have the option of bringing the bears on behind your front lines, even though that they're ambushing from the sides, and then running into the center of your army to then benefit from the stone and the feet and everything else later on. So 100% of the time, almost entirely, I ambush both units of bears.
It's interesting because the threat of them is almost worse than the actuality of them in ambush, like forcing positioning conceits out of somebody. And how they're forced to react, even I've noticed with a single ambushing unit, how your opponent concedes board positioning is often more effective than if you were to just say, deploy a unit of bears and start going at them, you know? Does that make sense?
Yeah, 100%. That's the experience I've had.
Yeah.
Because people do, they give up board position, they do weird things with their line of sight, like face the edge of the board, or just prepare themselves for those bears, and it really throws them off if, you know, either you come or you just don't. Sometimes I've seen somebody line up half of a unit of sentinels facing the edge of the board, barely out of their deployment zone with their feet on, and I've just been like, okay, I'll bring the bears on back here and stand outside your threat range, and I'll see you when your feet's over.
Yeah, and while they're not on the table, they're affecting both sides of the board, versus when they are, they're just affecting, like, one, or they're affecting, you know, the single position where they are versus affecting all positions. And I think if people kirk out to that wrong, it'll really give you a big leg up.
Yeah, so I played against a local the other week, and they took an entire unit of Desters and lined them up on one side of the board facing the edge of the board so that I couldn't get in on his Desters. And then I was just like, okay, I'm not ambushing. Your 20-point unit is worthless now. Either let me charge into their asses when you turn them around to do some real work, or my bears will just sit here menacingly.
Why in the name of God were they playing Desters?
Yeah, I don't know. It's Andy. And he's one of our locals who likes to do weird stuff. It works a lot of the time, but an entire unit of Desters literally touching a table edge does not work.
Or it's genius.
And then I guess the final question I have is, historically, trolls have had a lot of problems going second because of the Creel Stone, and just their warlocks have a lot of stuff they want to do on turn one, and if they are threatened by the enemy and have to feel the Creel Stone and do all of their work, they end up feeling a lot of pressure. And that seems like it would be exacerbated slightly in this list because of all the AD you have. And we have Awaken the Stone now, so it's a little bit easier to feel the stone, and Berka doesn't seem like he spends a lot. Do you still feel like going second is a huge issue, or is that not the case?
No, I think that the going issue, the second issue, has been kind of solved by that, to your point, Awaken the Stone. And Borka specifically, he plays a lot more with the defensive stats in this list than he does necessarily from requiring the armor of the stone. Like the difference between arm 14 and 16 is not necessarily huge all the time, but the difference between defense 13 and defense 15 with concealment can be. So I find often I can, even if I'm going second, the opponent is probably scared of the threat range of things like the Raiders, of which is 15 in this list with throwing their AoEs, or the Fire Eaters, which is 16 in this list with the assault sprays, 18 if I for some reason have some obnoxious hunter's mark, again going back to that psychological warfare point of view. So some people will actually not push up or get as aggressive as they can on the first turn because they don't want that immediate reciprocation from the army coming at them. So that kind of buys Berka a little bit more time to fuel the stone and get up to his full potential in supporting the board.
So I want to ask a question. Like, was, you know, you fielded this list all but two of your games at GrotzCon. What was the situation that led to that? Was it like a surpassing amount of practice you'd been putting into this list since January? Or do you think it might have been like just more what you were seeing that day? Like, oh, today is a Borka day versus today is List B day. Or was it some conjunction of the two?
I would say it was a mixture of the two for sure. You know, you always have those days when one caster is going to get lead on more than the other. For champions, I had the plan to go in, and 99% of my games were going to be Borka 2. The only exception to that was going to be if there was a mass incorporeal or, you know, a Denny 2 on the other side of the board that I had to deal with. And that was what Grim 1 was for, because he could play the same list but knock off incorporeal, which was the plan for him.
Mm-hmm.
But when it came to the Masters, where that question is more relevant, because I am comfortable with the Madrak and the Borka 2 list, I think it was just what I saw that day. You know, when I had the opportunity to drop Madrak and when I thought he was the better list, that's what I dropped. So, like I said earlier, I played that Legion Thagrosh 1 game in the Champions, and I was forced to play it with Borka 2. And even though I won, it was a bad game for Borka 2. So when I saw that list again in the Masters tournament, I dropped Madrak, knowing I didn't want to play that match again. And then when I played Minions in the second round, again, that's not a matchup I want to play with Borka 2, because he's going to drop Maelok into me, so he gets Madrak 1. But then the rest of the time, I felt more comfortable playing the games with Borka 2, so that's why he saw the table.
Right. Okay. Yeah, because I mean, this is kind of a flip-flop from LVO, where it was, you know, predominantly Madrak in your games there. And I was curious whether it was like, oh, Borka had just been getting more table time or what. I mean, that sounds like a situation I had at Adepticon a couple of years ago, like doing the doing the Iron Gauntlet run. I think I dropped Xerxes to almost every round because it was just the list to drop every single round. And then I hit a Krix opponent in the last round that would have required Xerxes, and I was compelled to drop Rasheth. And like, well, this sucks for me. Next day in Masters, it's just a Rasheth day. It's a Rasheth day all day. And then I hit Wold War in the last round and I'm compelled to drop Xerxes. And like, well, this sucks. But yeah, sometimes you just have days that are like, this is the list for today.
That's actually probably the reason why I'm super glad DNC is going to die with 2018.
Oh, holy crap.
I was just about to say, I love DNC so much. And I love how much just frothy anger it used to create.
Okay, well, you and Travis can go shack up somewhere with your flaming hills and acid water and DNC.
Three round list DNC.
Oh, God. Those are the days. I miss those days. Those were the best days. We should just go back to that version of War Machine.
Yeah, that was the Sioux. They had three lists in their Masters. Fortunately, it wasn't just a But it was, yeah, three lists, had to play them all, and I played all the way to the last game and then was compelled to play Doomshaper 3, which is a well-practiced list, but as I mentioned, was not something I was super happy playing in this current steamroller. And I was fortunate to get lucky in that game specifically, but it was still like, oh god, why does DNC exist? And especially, why is it three list DNC? This is ridiculous.
Yeah. You know what I missed too is having DNC with three lists and character restrictions. That was the best. I don't think you guys understand how fun is like I understand how fun is.
We have different opinions on what fun is, I guess. Yeah. Yeah, when I played Jeff in the finals of the Masters, and we came down to it, and I was actually wishing that they had that he had had to play Ashlyn again, because I knew he was uncomfortable with it, and he didn't have to. So I was like, "Drat, I've done the work. I've played my lists. What's going on? Come on."
Okay, so let's just kind of like rush through the games. Basically, I just want to go on a case by case basis and go through like the list decision making and kind of like try and break down whether I mean, like we've talked about bits and pieces here, but like whether it was like a super on paper good matchup, whether you just felt you could brute force it, or whether you just misevaluated things. So the first tournament was what's it called? The local invitational?
No, yeah? That was the final tournament. The first tournament was our champions.
Okay, so starting with the champions, you brought Borka 2 and Grimm. They were literally the same list except different warlocks, right? Or you got rid of Lanissa for something.
Had a slightly different battle group. So instead of Lanissa and instead of the two heavies, I had a Glacier King. So Glacier King, bomber. Fire Troll, no bomber. Yeah, it was not the greatest of lists, but it I practiced it a couple times. It worked into what it needed to work into.
Right. Well, and that's the beauty of champions is you know the entire field and like the possible list paradigms. Like you can plan for, okay, among these, what is that, 52 casters or thereabouts, I can plan for Borka can play all of these except for this specific configuration inside of Krix. Then I need a guy who can deal with it out of my four.
Yeah, precisely. He was there to be like, any two, you don't have stealth or incorporeal anymore, and my Glacier King's going to shoot you in the face, and that's going to be that. That was his whole plan.
Brilliant. But
because I didn't have to see that, he didn't get played.
Right, and he also, surprise, doesn't deal with Thagrosh 1 either, I'm guessing.
No, I wouldn't want to play that match either, considering I'm not comfortable with Grimm 1, and the Thagrosh surprise of being immune to fire was not fun for the list I was comfortable with. It has the same problem of having 75% of the army being, you know, fire-typed damage. So
is Thagrosh even in ADR right now? I actually don't know.
Well, I played him, so I
would. Oh, yeah.
Either it's a world.
I've been extra surprised.
Yeah.
Either I screwed up or my opponent really screwed up.
Yeah.
I think that's one where it's fair to blame the TO.
Yeah, I think that'd be fair. Like I said, it's a pretty low-key event, so somebody might be able to see something through like that on the TO, but you know, I'm glad I'm going to have to double check that later on to see if that's actually the case.
Hopefully the TO just took a fiver and let it pass.
Yeah, I'm not sure. You know what? At the end of the day, I don't think it would have I don't think it impacted anything, so you know, it's not the end of the world. If Thagrosh won it, it wasn't on ADR, I would be concerned. But
okay, so I pulled up their ADR. It's Krissa, Thagrosh 1, Ryas 1, Fianna 2.
So the opponent I played in the first round, he had Thagrosh 1 and he had Fianna was his pairing.
Borka seems really good into Fianna. But yeah, so does Grimm.
He saw the match and was immediately, he told me afterwards, he's like, there's no way I can play this match. So that's why I chose Thagrosh. And I said, well, you know, Thagrosh is, in addition to that, good into both of my lists. So, yeah, that was the choice there. Because it was a bad match for me, I had to pull some shenanigan. Stone moves up, gives plus one speed. Earthborn's within 2 inches of some terrain. I double throw, I threw... Typhon while having rage on the Mauler out of a zone, and then I had to throw Azrael with rage on the Earthborn out of the other zone and triple score in order to win the game under Thagrosh's stupid strength debuff. So it was like really dicey, but you know, it got there. So I was at that point, it was not looking good on attrition. So I was like, okay, that's it. We need to close this out now.
So going forwards, like obviously you clearly didn't like this matchup. Would you alter your Grimless further from what it was? Because it seems like from talking to you that the only thing you really wanted to put Grim into was Denny. Do you feel that you could have retooled it so it would have been a more like it would have also covered Thagrosh?
Yeah, I think moving forward I'll need to have an answer as well as Denny. So that'll be the plan for the next Champions event I go to, whenever that is.
Well, probably it's Lock and Load and Seattle Open pretty much. And then after that, the rotation is changing. So may or may not be a concern next time.
You're not going to Seattle, right?
No, I'm not. I was half considering it if I had not gotten the at least a third this weekend, because that's all I needed to do to qualify for IG.
Well, congratulations.
Sweet.
So I was pretty happy about that, but I'm going to run down the rest of my lists for champions, or rest of my games for champions, if you want me to just fire through them.
Yeah.
I played Rask round two. He was playing the kind of Rask and Super Friends list. We played on Spread the Net, and I was able to just kind of bully him off of scenario.
What was his other list?
I believe it was Rask and Jaga Jaga. I'm not sure what the decision was for not dropping Jaga Jaga, but I think Rask is the right choice.
Was it the Croak gun line?
I honestly don't remember. I don't think it was the Croak gun line. And if it was, I could see a very valid argument for not dropping that into Borka 2.
Yeah, but you felt very unthreatened by Jaga. You figured it was going to be Rask, and you felt comfortable putting Borka into that, I'm assuming between the counter charges and the feet and everything.
Yeah, I felt really good about the Rask matchup. I didn't think for a moment he was going to drop Jaga Jaga. But I really feel comfortable with Borka 2 into most battle group heavy lists. And even with the Super Friends list, it's not his battle group, but it's still like a beast centric list. So I felt really comfortable in that matchup, and it showed in the game. You know, he wasn't able to do much. And like I said, just kind of got pushed off scenario real quick. So the feat really locks down beasts really well. So.
Yeah, it turns out models that are trying to do a bunch of attacks to get value hate it when they become stationary after their first attack.
Yeah, precisely. So you're weird. Like, oh, I have five beasts. You have five attacks this turn. Have fun. So then after that, I played a Heretic, and this was into the a WTC teammate of mine from last year, Josh Richter. And he played, unfortunately, another battle group-centric list into me. He played a Dark Menagerie Heretic list, and we played on standoff, which is just particularly bad for him because I walk. Like at first I threatened the run into the back of his zone with the Raiders. He pandemoniums it, so instead I just walk into the middle of his zone with it, and then I leave my counter charging or magic weapon attacks in the middle of kind of other zones, and by the end of turn three, the game is essentially over. There's a funny moment where I create a little bubble of heavies to stand behind for Borka 2 because I'm fairly far up the board. And then in my mind, for some reason, I think it's okay to counter a gremlin swarm that comes into my zone, and I bubble and stand in front of a Skid and Moans, but I'm very thankful that the Skid and Moans was not actually able to get through that turn. But it would have been very bad if he had. So after that, I played a Convergence Army. In the semifinals, I played a Axis double tap force. So he had lots of sprays, but you know, with proper spreading out, I can mitigate the sprays, and once the models kind of get within threat range, they can just remove the taps in combat pretty easily. So even with Bulldoze, I pushed the Axis player off scenario, and we played the pit, and it was over fairly quickly. And then finally,
and he wasn't able to get enough value with the sprays. That's the one that kind of gets me, because I feel like, I mean, like, I guess with proper spacing, because you're going to be far-ish from him.
Yeah, so proper spacing, and the list actually gets up to pretty decent armor, and he has to, my opponent kept going for the extra spray, the extra damage, like one in each kind of area, and you just, he'd either remove one model really well, like a bear, or he'd, you know, maybe just kind of flounder out on the heavier models. Like, there was a pretty nicely placed wall too, so there was an Earthborn that was in threat range that was pretty safe most of the game. And being unable to be bulldozed, he was kind of a key piece that my opponent had to remove. That being said, I did take the path of valor and, you know, ask how far Teps threats on one turn and ran Borka as far away from those Teps as I possibly could. So that was the last kind of play of the game there. And yeah, that was kind of that. And then, like I said, I played Jeff last round of the champions event. He played Ostrom. I played Borka 2. Sorry, the previous one was Breakdown. And then this one, we played the Pit. He won first turn, moved up to Threaten. This is a weird one for the Borka 2 list, where I move up out of Idrian's, thinking the only way I'm going to get value out of my feet is to use the stealth. So I move up outside of 11 inches and I feet. So I'm not going to get anything for the stationary part of the feet, but, you know, dwarves don't really care about that anyways. And then he feeds, moves up, sprays a few models down. I don't have particularly great spacing, so I lose a few more models than I should. And then the game actually begins and we attrition each other for a few turns until he eventually loses on clock. It's actually a pretty good matchup for Borka 2, because he can't be assassinated as long as you keep the Earthborn alive. So the Earthborn is probably the most important part of the list in that matchup. So he tried to send in his driller to get the Earthborn at one point, but again, he was hanging around a wall and the driller wasn't able to take him out. And then he just kind of, the Earthborn damaged the driller enough so that he wasn't ever going to really kill him. And then they just patted each other on the back for a few turns until the game ended. So
it sounds like he was playing a slightly different version, because I don't think he had a driller in either of the times he played me. Because one time he played me with ADR and one time he played me without ADR. And I don't think either time he had a driller on him.
Yeah, we played again the second day, and when he had access to the ADR, I believe he dropped the driller from his list for more.
It might have been in his ADR version. He might have just not had it in his main for whatever the Master's qualifier was. I think it was technically considered a steamroller.
Yeah, but in that case, he did. But yeah, he just, like I said, we grounded out. We punched each other in the face for a few turns. At the end of the game, he was up 2 CPs to 1. But there was still a couple turns remaining when he clocked. It was just too many attacks to go through in 7 turns. And too
was
much
he up or down on attrition?
It was pretty close at that time. I think personally that I was up. My plan was just like, I was like, I'm not going to be able to kill dwarves on things like the feet turn really efficiently, but I can light them all on fire really well. So the Pyre Troll was like probably the MVP, because the dwarves would all cluster around like a bear, and the Pyre Troll would light like 5 of them on fire, and then, you know, maybe half of them would die the following turn or die as the turns went on. So that was good. But yeah, that was the dwarves and the bunnies. They trade outside of feature, and I don't think they trade particularly well against the trolls, but that feature is brutal, because you can't do a whole lot against Arm 21. You can chip away at it, but not that much Arm 21.
Yeah, it seems very interesting, because I feel like the Raiders are the Raiders and the Fire Eaters should just die trivially in this matchup, right? And so it comes down to how much work the Bears in the battle group can do. I mean, like, you'll trade, but like, there's no way that the Raiders aren't going to die in droves as soon as they come into contact with the bunnies. And so,
yeah, and that's fair. I think after the like second turn, once I said the bunnies came in on his feet, I think I had maybe 3 Raiders remaining. It wasn't a lot. But the Fire Raiders stood at the back of the zones, and because I went second, This was actually one of the cases where I thought going second was a huge advantage for me, because he had to commit to the zone and come into Fire Eater range before he had the opportunity to come and get them. Outside of like one or two bunny sprays per turn. And like I said, most of the bunny sprays went for the raiders. So,
all right. I think we're getting lost in the weeds a little bit.
Sure.
How dare you? Like, I will take as much time as I goddamn please talking about this.
Stroking your trollish egos.
It's not their egos he's stroking.
Okay, so that was the culmination of champions. At this point, we accidentally posted a congratulations saying that you won the whole thing, which was premature but apparently correct.
You were just future sight right there. You
yeah,
apparently.
But then, so you started all over again the next day, and you played in Masters this time.
Yeah, so played in the Masters. This was essentially our LCQ for the Invitational. We talked about the Thags 1 matchup I played. Again, same guy, same match, same kind of result, but with Madrak 1 instead of Borka. Second game I played in Dominions. I played Madrak 1. He played Maylock. We grounded out. I think this matchup entirely comes down to who rolls the dice better to go first. And I won the roll, so I won the game.
Mm-hmm.
Third matchup of the day, I played Kalissa. I played Mr. John Fares, one of my WTC teammates. He played Kalissa into me, and I was able to grind it out eventually on Scenario. I played Borka 2 in that one, so that was it was a tight game.
So what was this alternative list? Because, like, you know, Borka is obviously, you had the matchups that were like, oh, okay, I really don't want Borka into this Thagrosh list, and that's a surprise. And then, what was the process that led to the all Borka all the time going into these matchups?
So John's Rhett army, he had Kalissa and Alara. And Alara threats for days and hits really hard when she comes in. They also get up to pretty decent accuracy in like the halberdiers. Mm-hmm. I think the Alara list had a unit of two units of halberdiers, a unit and a unit of defenders. So they were they're actually really potent infantry models that can come a long way and hit accurately and hit. So I didn't feel comfortable putting my Madrak list into that. The problem that I find with those lists for the Rhett player is that even his whole list or his whole plan with Alara is to go really far and hit hard, and Borka 2 goes further and ends up hitting harder. So he has to play Kalissa to use the I can't charge you feat, which was actually a really interesting choice. I didn't really see how the matchup was going to go coming out the door, but it was cool because like I moved up and I was like, all right, so I'm gonna get a great turn next turn. I did all this positioning, and then he's like, oh, you can't charge me. I was like, oh yeah, that's really good. Like, now I'm kind of just stuck outside these zones, like wanting to come in and kill you, but I can't. So yeah, it was a really good play on his part, which is no less than I'd expect from a player of his caliber. So mm-hmm. Like I said, I snuck that one out on a Scenario win on Standoff. Was the one we played again. So,
but basically it was the off list there that was driving you into your Borka list.
Yeah, precisely. I didn't think Madrak could handle that much injury. In case for some reason he was like, I tricked you, I'm gonna play the Halberdiers list. Or, you know, these other lists had two AFGs as well, which is also not good for Madrak 1, because you can't spread around the momentum shot damage.
Right, that's not great for you.
After that, I played Brian Sin, or a fellow you might know as Mr. Malorian. He played Magnus 1 into me, and again, we had that battle group centric versus Borka 2 game that work out.
Magnus 1 or Magnus 2?
The I lock you in place feat. Which one's that?
Magnus 2. Okay, was really surprised to hear Magnus 1, because this feat's like, what's it? Oh, all your warjacks get to run at the end of your turn?
super good. Don't underestimate
it. I haven't written wrong here. Yeah, that would be very bad.
Yeah, I
was, certainly it was Magnus too.
Yeah, I was surprised by that too. Like, what?
Dude, okay, that makes back.
That hashtag makes, meta bending.
Okay, that makes sense. But it was like large battle group, which Borka likes, and then you've just got to make sure you like actually don't get, you know, blitzed by him on scenario, and then you're playing a game which favors you.
Precisely. And we even played Spread the Net, which is typically a Magnus favorite, but the bears and the feet counter it so hard that
bears seem like a slam dunk
on both attrition and scenario when the game ended.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, bears seemed like such a slam dunk into him.
Yeah, he made a play where he thought it like Asta was going to be safe, and then the bears just came in and rolled the, I think it's a 7 that they needed to hit him. So he's like, oh, I have repost, then I have dodge, and the bears attack and cranked him in the face, and down he went. So it's like, oh, now your flag is mine. Thank you.
RIP in pieces.
So that was that game. And then in the finals of Masters, into Mr. Jeff Everett. And we played the same matchup. This time he has ADR. So he goes for a plan of like, he puts Rupert in the list. He puts Alton Ashley in the list. He puts the Mortar in the list. I think at this point, like I said, I think he pulls out the Driller and the game.
This sounds exactly like the ADR swaps he did with me into Golgrima. Just like, oh god, that artillery with Snipe getting into your Creelstone is such a goddamn nightmare.
Yeah, well, particularly for me, he had a play Iris and was able to get a bead on the stone and just pop the stone. I lost all the fury on it, but again, because I'm playing so with the defensive stats than the armor stats, it wasn't actually the end of the world, so... it was a tight game. I think it was tighter than our first game, because obviously Jeff's a smart player and he's going to learn from the match and be better the second time. And he also has the ability to change his list to make it better for him. But eventually we come to a point where he goes for an assassination play. And there's a little bit of confusion on the play where he moves up and he puts up bulldoze. And then I remind him that after he starts measuring towards my caster, that Earth's Blessing is up and has been up all game long. And then Ostrom is within threat range of Borka, and the game just essentially ends. So less than ideal of an ending, but, you know, that's how that one finished up. So, yeah, that was the Masters tournament in total. I really loved all of the games I played. It was a great experience to see exactly how far Borka could be pushed, and going into that idea of like single list at that point. Like I said,
well, he can't be pushed at all because he has Earth's Blessing.
Yeah, there you go.
So what would have a field needed to look like to have you change it up? I mean, Thagrosh 1 being an obvious example. Like, what was the difference there, like between, you know, the Grotzkon run and the LVO run? Like, what would a field that gives you either a more balanced list breakdown or a split the other way list breakdown look like?
I think I haven't played the matchup a ton yet, but I think like Signar could be bad for Borka 2. Like at LVO, the player that beat Borka 2 in Champions was Greg Schatt, and he knocked me out with the Siege 2 list. That was particularly good. So I'm a little bit concerned to see a bunch of them in the meta. You know, if Legion does make that huge comeback and one is everywhere, I'll have to be concerned with that. But outside
Protector
of that,
2 might have a fire immunity comeback.
Yeah, you know, if you're playing a bunch of fire immunity, that's going to be concerning for me. Or, you know, if Denny 2 is everywhere, then there's going to have to be an answer for that in the second list. But otherwise, I still feel comfortable playing that list into most scenarios. So,
okay, interesting. And is it the same for Madrak? Like, is that something you feel comfortable playing most of the time?
I do, yeah. Like I said, I used to lean really heavily. I've played him a ton now, so I'm really happy with how that matchup generally plays out for me. And I think the pair essentially is really good together. Mm-hmm. I had a post on Lore Mahord's the forum there the other day and just said, you know, like they really balance each other out really well when they're built for, you know, what I've built the lists for.
When they're built to be BFFs.
Exactly. Yeah. And you know, that's the entire plan, right? You're building two lists that balance each other and cover each other's weaknesses. And that's what I feel my two lists do particularly, but yeah. Are they the best lists in the world? Probably not, but you know, they work. So.
Right. Yeah. Well, and there's also some element of who's got all the chips. Like if you're actually succeeding with it, then what's best in a theoretical vacuum doesn't matter until it materializes in practice. But it's interesting what you said there about being perfectly fluent and conversant with both lists in most situations. And I think when Mark initially broached this topic, like, oh, yeah, having, you know, a single list that you are particularly dominant with, that's a big deal and shows up very frequently especially when people are specialists or pioneering something new that's like really reshaping the meta. But I think the biggest hallmark is like the phenomenon of that single list mastery actually shows up in retrospect on particular runs where you have today is a Borka day, you know, something like that. But in actuality, like having a really well-rounded and effective pair that you're pleased with means having two lists that it could be an either list day. Like you would be happy having a Madrak day or a Borka day. And like just sometimes the pattern shows up.
Yeah, I completely agree. If you're comfortable and you're into both your lists, that's the best place to be. In my mind, I don't necessarily want to go into a tournament thinking I'm going to play one list all the time. Because eventually it happens at almost every tournament for me for some reason I put myself into a match where I'm disadvantaged and you have to find a way to be able to play out of that. And you know, if you have the reps and you have the experience, you can do that. But when you don't, and you're playing even with a list that you think is just good on paper, it's not necessarily going to work out very well for you.
I'm just trying to think if there's anything else I want to touch on. It sounds like, Chris, you're definitely in the camp where you feel comfortable with both of your lists. But with the two other examples I gave, which was Jeff and Keith, both of them like literally said, I have no plans to play this other list. It's just there to like live like or like have people play under the pretense that I have another list and I have options. I think it's interesting. It's kind of like being ambidextrous versus like very good with your left hand or your right hand. Mm-hmm. And I definitely have days where it's like, oh, it's a Colgrimmon day. No, it's a Madrak day. Yeah. I had that multiple times over the course of Kingdom Con, like over the 3+ days of like tournaments. Like entire heats were just like, oh no, I'm playing one list the entire day. Like that's just how it's gonna be.
Yeah. And I tell you what, I was living in that situation when I was playing Ret competitively, and it is so much lower stress and for me more preferable to be in the place of like ambidexterity with your lists, like equally comfortable with both and ready to have like, you know, a list one versus a list two day. Because when I was playing Ret, I needed every day to be a Ron day. Because if it was an Ossian day, I was screwed.
Yeah, so that's something that I think I see in a lot of people where they have one list they're happy with, and they're constantly trying to, like, soul search out what the other list is. And so they never get good with their off list. And so if you ever, like, step to them and they've, like, got to play their bad list, it's just awful. Like it's like a total rout.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I have that with I almost have the opposite of that now with my Scorn pairing, like Morgul 3 and Zadesh 2. You know, I'm still sub 100 games with both casters, and I don't ultimately know whether they're a good pair for each other, but like, by God, I have practice with them. So I'm just going to keep playing for now while I experiment in the off time.
So I guess that's an interesting line of question that I'm not sure if we went down. How much did you feel that raw practice got you through certain situations, Chris? Like, how often were you like, damn, I'm screwed? Like, thank God I have the reps to like understand exactly what to do here.
I think I felt that way probably. I mean, every time I played the higher level players, for sure, I felt that way in that, like, oh, thank God I have the practice just so I can stick it out in this matchup. But in that Legion matchup specifically, because it was so bad for me, that could have been it. That could have been round one, tournament over, go home. But I was just glad that I could, because I had the reps and I knew what the list could do in certain places, I could find my way through a problem that might have been unsolvable otherwise. So,
and how much did you think that was like particular list experience versus trolls experience in general? Like, what's it called? You mentioned relying pretty heavily on throws to save your bacon in the first encounter with Thagrosh. What's it called? Trolls do that all the time, because I think literally every heavy and gargantuan has at least one open fist. Except for the brawler now?
Yeah, they had to change it up on us. Yeah, it was trolls in general, I think. You know, there wasn't anything that was particularly earth-shattering in that list specifically that got me through the matchup. It's just knowing, like I said, what the options were available to me that were going to help me out. And you only really understand what all of those look like when you get to a place where you've had enough games, you know.
And with Borka, you mentioned like understanding like that he could like take a lot of punishment and still not die, and there were a couple of failed assassinations out there. How much did you feel that having a lot of reps with Borka meant you know exactly where you could place him and like not like care about dying at all?
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. Having the reps and seeing how much he can take in the face, particularly on feet turn, because I find he's very aggressive. Like he's obviously best when he's as far up the board as he can be without dying, which for Borka is actually really far up the board, is important for that list. So knowing where you can strike that balance is really essential. And if you don't have that experience of every once in a while it doesn't work out, then you don't actually know where the line is. So get the reps, get them in trouble sometimes in your practice games, and see what happens, because that's how you're going to find the line.
Yeah, I'm definitely giving him serious consideration. I'm not sure if he's going to replace Kogrima, because I'm not sure if I want to play double Storm of the North, but I mean, your run is definitely inspiring me to spend some dojo time on him.
Yeah, and the other option, if you want to try him, of lists that have been successful, is obviously the Tim Bahnke list with the Paradunia heavies. I've made my opinions on Paradunia already evidence cast, but you know it's successful, so I don't have a valid argument against it really. So he's a good caster. Give him a try. See what you like. If you like him in Storm of the North, great. If you don't want to play double Storm of the North, there's another option for you. So.
I think Storm of the North has a lot of good like output coverage. My main problem is you basically have no magical weapons then. That's what really scares me. Like you have Madrak Axe and Borka's club, and I guess Lanissa nukes.
Yeah, and that's and like I believe, it. I believe you have the Rune Bearer in Berka does have a
spray.
Yeah, which is actually really kind of funny in the army because it's like a mini Kogrima spray, right? Everything's cold anyways, so you just spray kind of wherever you want. And then the other magical attack is Valka, who I find usually comes out to be pretty critical in some matchups. But yeah, that's where it all fell down for me. Like I said, the one game I played into Crix, I took the list that I said I wasn't going to take when I played Borka 2. And then there was that stupid new Satixis solo that goes in corporeal every time she... And I could not kill her because she's def 15, she has dodge, Lanissa can't get her, the Rune Bearer can't get her, and Borka, she just avoided Borka too. And it was just impossible for me to kill that model.
Yeah, that's a problem.
Whereas issue. Like, oh, you no longer have that corporeal, and now Guided Hand +2 to hit champs will just remove you.
Okay. Chris, do you have any last like remarks you want to make on this topic, or Mark or Ben, anything you want to go over or give shout outs to from the con?
Not from the con.
I was just going to say, from a con perspective, I mean, I know Red Deer, Alberta may not sound like the greatest place in the world, but, you know, it's a small town, which means it's – or a smaller town. So it means it's pretty cheap to get there. You fly into Calgary and you can rent a car and drive up there in an hour, or catch a ride with the many locals that go. And it is a, like I said, fantastic event run very well, very well organized, and – everyone there just seems to be having a ton of fun. So anyone who wants to come out should definitely look into it next year. It's always in about the same time frame, so look out for it. It'll fill up quickly. So yeah, keep your eyes out, and I hope anyone who wants to have some good games of War Machine feels invited to come join us for some games.
Awesome. Well, we got a year to prep for it.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm a little stressed out, though. Like, the people who show up are just too good for me.
Isn't that the case at any
tournament?
I'm going
to have to spend the whole next year teching for Borka.
Yeah, which he won't play next year at all.
Yeah, I'll have to have some Borka counter by then.
Thank you for listening to Dominate for Two. Find us on Facebook and Twitter. Got a question or an episode idea? Email us at dominatefor2.podcast@gmail.com.
So, are we ever going to explain to people how much they're paying us to suddenly be pro-troll like this?
I wish they were paying us anything.
Big trolls. Yeah. Big trolls got us in their pocket.
This sudden surge of pro-troll podcasting out of nowhere. Where's it coming from? It's going to sweep it all.
Look, let the record show I'm anti-troll. Mark is just a co-intel pro-troll infiltrator in our podcast.
You know, I'd like to point out that the only faction I've never bought a model for is trolls.
Trolls are turning our frogs gay.
Ha ha ha.